Broadcasting live.
It's America's longest running talk show on computers. It's Computer America, bringing you the biggest names in technology with guest interviews, new products, and your emails. Listen live at ComputerAmerica.com
on any device around the world.
Email the show at live@ComputerAmerica.com or find us on social media.
Be sure to check out our website for contests, giveaways, show notes, live video stream, podcasts, and more.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome everyone into the Computer America Show. We are the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology term podcast. Everyone, welcome into the program. It's going to be one of those days. And what do I mean by one of those days? It's going to be a great day. Of course, that's what I mean. It's everyone, I hope that you're having a fantastic day and you're ready for some Computer America. Because today on the program, we have, of course, Ralph Bond. Every Friday of the week. And yeah, it turns out there's a Friday every week. Who knew? Every Friday, every month, he joins us to talk all about science, tech, news, trends. He is our science and technology trends correspondent, and he picks up a number of different stories that you are going to love. So we'll get into more with what Ralph does and here on the program in just a moment, but before we do that, ComputerAmerica.com. That's where you'll find everything, including past shows, future shows, show notes, articles, reviews, and podcasts, video archive, and of course, we have a dedicated section just for Ralph as well. So if you want a more Ralph-focused website experience, then check out his site. Or, of course, you can check out the part of our show that is, we have a playlist on YouTube and, just easy to find everything that we do with Ralph because his shows are always fun and they're very, very relevant even long after some of the others because, let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes when you interview, let's say, a company, a product, and it's Microsoft Office 2018 just came out, that one kind of loses its replayability, just a little bit down the line. But Ralph shows are anything but because they're cutting edge, they're science, and, they're fun. So everyone, let's go ahead and just get right into today's segment with the man himself. So Ralph, welcome back onto the program, and I hope that you are doing well.
I'm doing great. And by the way, for our audience, if you're joining us for the first time, what I do is I look for stories about science and technology trends that really kind of fly under the radar typically of the mainstream press, but are very significant. And they're in the areas of robotics, medical technology, sustainable energy technology, transportation advances, space research, physics, you name it. What Ben and I do is try to leave you with the end of your week on an up note of inspiration and hope based on where we're going with science and technology.
Absolutely. And I think you do a great job of that. Killer robots have been making a lot less news. So admittedly, killer AI may be on the future, but killer robots, not so much. No, you have a very good mix today of stories. And yeah, really looking forward to, story number four, where you might have heard a bit about it before because it made a lot of mainstream attention. But to get more into it, Ralph, I really do think that a lot of other news orgs, they're just like, here's what happened, and isn't that amazing? And then they kind of leave it at that. I think we're going to get more information, even with the stories you have heard. Ralph always throws in his points. So, Ralph, do you just want to jump right into the first story?
You bet. And just before we do that, though, folks, come out to ComputerAmerica.com to get today's, we call it the show notes. And the show notes have the links, images, and so forth, especially for those of you who are listening to us as a podcast. Come on out to ComputerAmerica.com. Get the show notes for today's show if you want to dive deeper, because what Ben and I do every Friday is we just give you sort of the greatest hits of each news article. And so if you want more, want to dive deeper, that's the way to do it. Come out to ComputerAmerica.com. And with that said, the first story, this one's really, really interesting. Its headline here is, a new material creates clean electricity from the air around it. Irresistible headline, right? And this is from Popular Science, a story by Andrew Paul. And again, in the show notes, we have links and images and all that good stuff for you. So here we go. According to a new study published on the 5th of May with Advanced Materials, engineers at the University of Massachusetts Amherst have demonstrated a novel air generator and they call it AirGen for short. It's a film that relies on microscopic holes smaller than 100 nanometers across, and that's less than a thousandth the width of a single human hair. So wow. These little 100 nanometer holes play a role in generating electricity, and we'll explain as we go on here. But first, a little setup. Essentially, this new technology is based on the same physics at play in storm clouds, lightning discharges. Remember, I don't know, a couple months ago, we did a story about latest technology in cloud seeding, and we talked about this, the physics of how lightning happens and rain and so forth. But anyway, reminder, lightning happens when the negative charges, electrons, in the bottom of a cloud are attracted to the positive charges, protons, on the ground. And that's what's going on with lightning. Again, the premise here, the author of the article stressed that it's based on the same physics. So,
yeah, if you've ever, if you're out golfing or if you're doing something out in the open or swimming or something like that, and you feel the hair on the back of your neck start to stand up, those are all the electrons in the air, and, you know, go get to shelter immediately.
Yes, run. Anyway, the incredibly small diameters of the holes set the stage for what is called mean free path, and it's not a path you can take for free to be mean to people. No, mean free path. So I said, I've got to learn more about this. So a little side note here before we go on with the article, what is the mean free path? Well, in physics, mean free path is the average distance over which a moving particle travels before substantially changing its direction or energy, typically as a result of one or more successive collisions with other particles. So I know that's very, very geeky. But with that said, here's how this new AirGen film works. Water molecules are floating all around in the air, and their mean free path is about 100 nanometers. Remember, that's 100 billionths with a B of a meter. Wow. As humid air passes through AirGen's materials, minuscule holes, the water molecules first come into direct contact with an upper and then a lower chamber in the film. This creates a charge imbalance, resulting in the generation of electricity. Okay, I know it's a lot of geeky stuff here to drink in, but wow. And so here's another side note I pulled up actually directly from the researcher's published paper. Mm-hmm. And this is what I do, by the way. These articles, we grab the essence from the article. Sometimes I go off and I add, I hope, value by doing additional side notes and so on. But anyway, a side note from the researcher's paper, they said, the common feature of these materials is that they are engineered with appropriate nanopores, little holes, to allow air, water to pass through and undergo dynamic adsorption and desorption. I love that. In exchange, So adsorption and desorption exchange at the porous interface, resulting in surface charging. The top exposed interface experiences this dynamic interaction more than the bottom sealed interface in a thin film device structure, yielding a spontaneous and sustained charging gradient for continuous electric output. Ding, ding, ding. That's the payoff. It's amazing. And as noted before, same physics at play in storm clouds, lightning discharges. And the author goes on to say, although the University of Massachusetts Amherst team's product generates a minuscule fraction of a lightning bolt's estimated 300 million volts, right? It's several hundred millivolts of sustained energy is incredibly promising for scalability and everyday use.
I think that's been a thing, Ralph, for a long time. Is, you know, people are like, if only we could harness the electricity in lightning. But that's just so much electricity at once. It's really hard to, you know, kind of capture that. So even just, you know, doing the same, I guess, kind of chemistry or physics as a lightning strike, I never considered that, you know, hey, we could just kind of do the same kind of science on a smaller scale and harness that really it is harnessing lightning to a much smaller scale,
harnessing the physics of lightning at the nanometer scale.
Yes
You gotta love it. So they go on to say, this is particularly evident when considering that air humidity can diffuse in three-dimensional space. Now we're getting really geeky here, folks. In theory, thousands of air gen layers can be stacked atop one another. So that's interesting. It's like a layered thing, thus scaling up the device without increasing its overall footprint. Mm. And according to their research, such a product could offer kilowatts of potential power for general usage. And the team believes their AirGen devices, made up of these layers and layers of this film, could one day be far more space efficient than other renewable energy options like solar and wind power. And what's more, this is really great, what's more, the material can be engineered into a variety of form factors to blend, get that, blend into an environment, as contrasted with something as visually noticeable as a solar farm or wind turbine. How about that?
Wow. So maybe, sorry about that. Maybe I just missed it, and you said somewhere in there. I'm curious what an ideal environment for these things would be, because for solar it's like a desert, low cloud density and bright sunshine days, whatever. For wind, it's obviously somewhere like a coast that has natural wind, kind of always happening. Ralph, did they mention like what a good environment for something like that? Like, is it just something with high humidity, or I don't know?
Well, the thing that's fascinating about humidity, they're even in the Mojave Desert. Mm-hmm. One of the driest places, and I spent time there at Fort Irwin in the National Guard, and I can tell you it's dry as can be, but there's still moisture in the air, minuscule, but it's there, right? Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Number two, I don't recall if in the article they had a lot of application ideas or suggestions, so in fairness, go back to the article and check that out. But I could see something like this film, maybe since it's so easy to apply, it's flexible, it can go over different surfaces. Maybe putting this on rooftops instead of solar panels, right?
Yeah. Just
putting this film on rooftops, on the tops of cars. I don't know.
You
pick your usage. Tents, all kinds of possibilities, right?
And as always with these, with these technologies, it doesn't even necessarily have to be an either or kind of thing. This could just replace certain materials and, go in conjunction, because it seems like it doesn't need like direct sunlight or anything. So probably just wherever, to your point, there's humidity, which is pretty much everywhere on Earth, it will operate ideally. And the fact that you can kind of stack them, it doesn't have to be like a football size sheet to, kind of generate the amount of electricity, stack them, is just great as well.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah. I love this story.
so, and just like a personal side, I want to everyone, like, this is why we enjoy having Ralph here on Fridays, because just yesterday I was out in public, just kind of sitting around in a grocery store or something like that. And I was overhearing a conversation between these two gentlemen, and one of them was telling, talking about, they predicted these kinds of weapons, they predicted these kinds of events and this kind of technology, brain scrambling and whatever the heck they were talking about. It was very catastrophic, the things he was really latching on to and being like, look what they thought of 30 years ago, and look what they can do today. Imagine what they can do in 10 years. And I feel like that's, so human of us to kind of worry about that kind of thing. But this is why it's fun with Ralph, is because, imagine what they can do in 10 years when electricity is made out of thin air, when, solar, just last week we talked about the solar getting a huge increase in capacity. I mean, imagine what they can do in 10 years, but like in a good way. I was just poking around, the publication, I think it was for, PopSci, Ralph, and they said that by 2050, the United States might reliably run on renewable energy. And that's like the first time I've ever read that headline where, hey, there's a possibility within the next, 20, 30 years, we get off of fossil fuels altogether. I mean, like, this is hopeful stuff. This is good stuff. And I just want to reiterate that I enjoy this. So, yeah.
Yes. And it is to your point, as we said at the outset of the Today Show, if you're looking to be inspired and leave and end your work week with an upbeat note, come and listen to us. This is what we do every
Absolutely.
Friday.
And story number two, I think, really highlights that, because on our day-to-day yes. program, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be real with you. There's always this cat and mouse game of cybersecurity. And mm-hmm. it's always easier to be an attacker than a defender, because a defender, you throw up your walls, you throw up your, yep. your security yeah. practices, and then it's yep. up to the attacker to look at a pretty much a stagnant target and think, how do I get into this? And yeah. it's, you know, the corporations or even the individuals are always on the back foot. Well, yeah. story number two might, you know, mm-hmm. be a turning point.
Yes, yes. I love this story too. Headline, new artificial intelligence model aims to plug key gap in cybersecurity readiness. And I got this from PNNL News, a press release written by Tom Rickey, and I'll explain who the PNNL people are. Wonderful bunch of folks. And we've got the link in the show notes and all that good stuff. So to set the stage, what the article's, news release authors, what he did is he offered a layperson's analogy to illustrate the problem that cybersecurity people face. So again, I thought this was a very clever way to help everybody understand what's going on here. So imagine you're the new manager of a large apartment building, and someone has taken one of your keys, and you're not sure which one. Was it for the first floor apartment? Was it for the mailroom? Maybe it's the master key for all the units, and all locks are vulnerable, as far as you know, and you'll need to change every lock to be completely secure. So again, this is the sort of layperson's analogy. Mm-hmm. But what if you knew exactly which key went missing? You could target your efforts, changing just the relevant lock and eliminating the threat immediately. Well, with that setup, the news release goes on to say, multiply that problem thousands of times over, and you'll understand what cyber defenders grapple with. And this starts to get really interesting for
That's
me.
A good analogy. So, yeah.
Yeah, isn't it? I thought that was really clever. So there are more than 213,800, very specific number, there are more than 213,800 available known keys, unofficial entry points into computer systems, and they're already in the hands of the bad guys, the criminals. Now, I said entry points. I need a little more refresh. Side note, more on entry points. In computers, an entry point is the point in a program, module, or function where the code begins, specifically the memory address where it begins. In a program, it is the first module of code, or even the first line of code that is executed. So there you go. That's what an entry point is.
And by the way, that 213,800 that you thought was so specific, those are the known exploits listed on the National Vulnerability Database.
There you go.
So those are... admittedly, the bad guys can go, oh, look, here are 213,000 ways we can mess with systems.
Yes.
But of course, it's also for the defenders to go, okay, here's 213,000 ways we know to defend our system against the bad guys. So,
yeah.
You know, that's where you get that weird number from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good. Thanks for that extra research. That's helpful. And there are likely many more of these entry points that are not known, right? Mm-hmm. So this is not a fixed thing. It's evolving. And how can all the threats and attacks be tracked, prioritized, and prevented? There's the problem set up. Okay. And the news release goes on to say that's impossible for any one person or team, of course. While computer analysts share leads by feeding information into multiple databases, such as what you were just showing, they don't have a map of how adversaries might use most of those 213,800 available known keys to wreak havoc. Now, here finally comes the big drum roll. Now, a team of scientists at the Department of Energy's Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, that's the PNNL, or the source of the news release. So scientists from the Department of Energy's Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, Purdue University, Carnegie Mellon University, and Boise State University, what an interesting team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have turned to artificial intelligence to help solve the problem. The researchers have knitted together three large databases of information about computer vulnerabilities, weaknesses, and likely attack patterns. The AI-based model automatically links vulnerabilities to specific lines of attack that adversaries could use to compromise computer systems. The work should help defenders spot and prevent attacks more often and more quickly. And here's the part that I absolutely think is terrific. The work is open source, with a portion now available on GitHub. In the show notes, we have a link right to where you can go see this. And the team will release the rest of the code soon. Bravo. Isn't that what? And I, you know me, Ben, I love teamwork. I love these kind of collaborative things.
I don't know. Giving the job of defending computers to computers seems like a good way for self-sufficiency for computers. It's a slippery slope to Terminator, obviously. That's all I'm saying. is letting computers manage themselves. This is dangerous territory. But to give just one more little bit of context to the story here, you know, you have that 213,800 number kind of floating around. Think about whenever people think about security, they think about Apple, duly or unduly. They figure Apple's pretty locked down, it's pretty secure, things like that. This is a story from just like a year or two ago, and it was hackers, a group of five white hat hackers had found 55 bugs or security flaws or keys, as this article was calling them, 55 of them, and had won about $300,000 worth of bounty money. But, you know, because the database has 213,000 doesn't mean that there aren't people continuously looking at Apple, Microsoft, you know, cloud services, Amazon, whatever. Yeah. And there are dozens and dozens and dozens of vulnerabilities that, you know, are not in the database. So giving this to artificial intelligence makes all the sense in the world. It's, Ralph, it's almost like the amount of, you know, passwords and the amount of like AI-generated images and things like that and, you know, stuff like that. Like, AI is such a powerful tool to create all this stuff and do all this stuff. We also need AI to kind of be our eyes and our first line of defense against, you know, a lot of what technology creates, because it's just so vast. It's so much.
Yes.
So there you go. So story number two, and I actually love it. It seems like a great application for AI. So story number two, story number three. And let's go ahead and talk about battery. And you know, Ralph, as always, I'm like, new battery technology, it's great. Yes. People always need to remember that, you know, battery improvements happen incrementally, not so much, you know, quantum leap level of battery research. But hey, this one is definitely very, very cool, because lithium ion does have a lot of problems. And this research team seems to be tackling them with a new type of battery. So
exactly. Let's talk about it. Right. You got it. So the headline here is research team creates revolutionary new batteries that they purport are safer, cleaner, and last longer than lithium ion batteries. And so for me, the key trend to watch here is watch oxygen ion batteries. That's the technology we're going to be talking about. I got this from a really interesting publication I've come on to recently called The Cool Down. Interesting name for a pub. This is a story by Wes Stenzel. And we saw in the show notes, there's a picture of the researchers in question, which is really cool. And here we go. A new breakthrough from the Vienna University of Technology called regenerative oxygen ion batteries, because there's been oxygen ion battery technology around for a bit here, but this is regenerative oxygen ion batteries may transform the world of energy storage, key there, energy storage, with the potential to replace lithium ion batteries in many, but not all, key applications. And I want to stress again, what we're talking about primarily is battery storage applications versus batteries that might show up in your smartphone or something like that. So keep that in mind as we go forward. And as Ben alluded to, there's a lot of known problems with lithium ion batteries, which are, of course, the most commonly used energy storage devices on the planet today. However, these batteries have a number of problems, including frequent overheating, and sometimes leads to fires and a tendency to lose effectiveness as they age, right?
I would, and really, it speaks to how safe lithium ion batteries really are. Like, imagine, Ralph, that you were, you know, talking to someone from the past and they're like, I got this great idea. It's going to give power to everyone. It's going to be in everyone's pocket. They're going to have like four devices in their pants at all times that power, you know, use lithium ion. And they're like, oh, that sounds great. What's the downside? They explode once in a while, you know, and you know, they look at you like you're crazy, but that's the world we live in. Everyone has, you know, little potential explosions in their pants. So, well, that's probably the wrong way to say that, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
I do. So, of course, the other part about lithium ion batteries is they have a substantial environmental impact. And I thought this factoid was kind of fun. As 1 ton of lithium necessitates 2.2 million gallons of water to obtain through mining. I didn't know that at all. I didn't understand that water was a part of the mining of lithium. Oh, well, anyway, which has a massive effect on communities near the mines. Duh. Additionally, lithium batteries include materials made of copper, nickel, and lead, which are potentially toxic. I think we've all heard this before, too. And improper disposal of lithium batteries can cause major environmental issues. Well, okay. With all that set up, drumroll, enter oxygen ion batteries, on the other hand, solve all of these problems, the researchers contend. And I did a little side note here. Wait a minute. What are oxygen ion batteries? Oxygen ion batteries are the type of rechargeable battery that works similarly to lithium ion batteries. The electrodes in oxygen ion batteries are perovskite. Ding, remember that from last week? Perovskite-based ceramics instead of typical lithium ion battery materials. The batteries are fire resistant and highly durable. Wow. And there's that good old perovskite coming back. According to the news release from the Vienna University of Technology, oxygen ion batteries don't have the same aging issue that lithium batteries face, which means they can maintain effectiveness for an incredibly long period. So important, right? Because my plug-in hybrid RAV4 at some point in the future will have to have its batteries replaced.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying with this technology, maybe not. They can also, oxygen ion batteries can be manufactured using incombustible materials that don't require the same rare elements as lithium batteries. That's important, which means they won't have nearly as substantial an environmental footprint and won't spontaneously explode if mishandled.
Always good.
Not only can oxygen ion batteries last a long time, they can be made from ceramic materials that cannot catch fire. Hooray. Now, a little reality check. The oxygen ion batteries aren't entirely flawless, and to the credit of the researchers, they put this out, as they possess a lower energy density than lithium batteries. So it was all too good to be true, but here's a little reality check, which means they can't be effectively used for electric cars or smartphones. But, however, the researchers say they might be the perfect batteries for large scale, I would say, storing of clean energy. So interesting technology with some caveats, some reality checks, but still very encouraging.
Yeah, there's a lot of applications. And Ralph, I think one of the most prominent ones, it was a bit bigger a couple of years ago. And, you know, the idea of it and then eventually making it reality, especially in like places like Texas and Australia and places that had problems with their electrical grid. But essentially having a better electrical grid, having a place that, you know, have the batteries to manage the, kind of the ups and downs and the demands and the declines in the electrical grid, this would be a great application for something like that. Or Ralph, my brother is a chemist, and during his during his graduate work, he worked with chemical batteries for hospitals. You know, they don't just have like a generator in the back that they kind of pour gasoline into. They have these giant submerged tanks that hold thousands and thousands of gallons of chemicals, and that's their kind of backup power system. They have these, you know, massive tanks that are essentially chemical batteries, which are old technology. You know, applications like that could also, you know, be definitely feasible, but not so much for your phone, like you said. But still, it doesn't mean that this problem isn't worth attacking just because you won't see it in a phone near you.
Right. Exactly.
Perfect. So story number three is great. And really, you know, there's always that one caveat, but I think just because it's not energy dense doesn't mean it's not good. So
exactly
great story.
Right.
Story number three. Story number four, this is the one that we were talking about that you've probably heard of because I know that I saw it on like three different news channels. But still, the implications for it are so astounding. And this is what we've been kind of working towards with Ralph, you know, on our segment. We've had, you know, numerous prosthetics and parts and, you know, kind of tapping into the spine and kind of thing. And not to give anyone the heebie-jeebies when I say spine tap, but still, this is a paralyzed person walking again. Like, this is the holy grail of what medical technology has been going for. So let's talk about it.
Yes, you got it. And this is a great example, again, of uplifting positive news and also an example of often, not always, I like to end our segment on Friday with something from the medical technology world that gives us hope for cures and for relief from all the horrible things that so many people have to face. So the headline here, again, as you alluded, paralyzed man walks using device that reconnects brain with muscles. This comes from the United Kingdom's The Guardian and a story by Ian Sample. This story is just so great, so inspiring. The illustrations in the show notes are very helpful too, folks. So come out and get them if you are interested at computeramerica.com. Okay, so here we go. A man who was paralyzed in a cycling accident in 2011 has been able to stand and walk with an attendant at this point after doctors implanted a device that reads his brain waves and sends instructions to his spine to move the right muscles. Wow. The fellow is Jert Jan Oskam, 40 years old, was told he would never walk again after breaking his neck in a traffic accident in China, but has climbed stairs and walked for more than 100 meters at a time since having this operation. Wow. Can you imagine how this man must feel? I mean, amazing. Just amazing.
I'm sure it was a real honor to take part in a study like this. He's not the only one, but he gets to be the first one to, you know, be able to do this. And very cool.
How wonderful. So he said himself, quote, "A few months ago, I was able for the first time after 10 years to stand up, have a beer with my friends." That's important, said Oskam, who is from the Netherlands. He's from Holland. So this technology, the Digital Bridge, is the latest from a team of neuroscientists in Switzerland, in specifically Lausanne University Hospital, who have a long-standing program to develop brain-machine interfaces to overcome paralysis. The project aims to use wireless signals to reconnect the brain with muscles that are rendered useless when the spinal cord nerves are broken. Wow.
I really like your next point here, because you can, you know, kind of imagine how hard like a natural fluid motion would be. So
So in a previous trial, Oskam tested a system that recreated the rhythmic steps of walking by sending signals from a computer to his spinal cord. While the device helped him to take several steps at once, the movement was quite robotic and had to be triggered by a button or sensor. Well, for the latest update, Professor Jocelyn Bloch, a neurosurgeon at Lausanne University Hospital, installed electrodes on Oskam's brain that detect neural activity when he tries to move his legs. So when he's thinking about moving his legs, right? The readings are processed by an algorithm that turns them into pulses, which are sent to further electrodes in his spine. The pulses activate nerves in the spine, switching on muscles to produce the intended movement. The system can capture the... Oh, I love this. This is a great line. The system can capture the thoughts of Jert Jan and translate those thoughts into stimulation of the spinal cord to reestablish voluntary leg movements. That one sentence is so profound. Let that sink in, folks. I'm awestruck. That's all I can say. The device does not produce swift, smooth strides, but Oscom said the implant, described in Nature magazine, allowed for more natural movements than before because standing up and walking were initiated and controlled by thinking about the actions, and the signals stimulate muscles needed to flex the hip, knee, and ankle. Bravo. There is hope. Wow.
Yeah, he's judging from the video, he's not going to run a 5K or anything like that anytime soon. But, in terms of mobility, infinitely, more mobile than being, paralyzed from the waist down or anything like that. Yep. So it's incredible. And Ralph, and as I was saying with story number two or story number one, it was like, if we're here now, imagine where we're going to be in 10 years. Yes. To have much more sense, like Ralph, even if only just more sensitive EKGs and, brain sensors,
sure,
and be able to send those signals much more, much more clearly to the legs and things like that. I mean, you're going to have people, that are going to be paralyzed and you'll never know it because they'll just be, living a normal life. That's that's the exciting part. So, and really all of this is the exciting part because all of these stories, if you want to find out more, you can check them out at computeramerica.com. But yeah, Ralph finds these amazing stories every single Friday to talk all about them. And Ralph, I want to thank you so much for doing that. You had a great mixed bag today. It was a lot of fun. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want more, computeramerica.com, or of course we have a link to Ralph's site as well. And until next time, everyone, I hope that you're having a great weekend. You're gonna do something fun and catch us back here same time, same place, every single Friday. Until next time, everyone, have a great day. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.